Pick a person nearby you, next to you, in front of you, behind you, and share just back and forth whether you were chanting to Krishna or just chanting. Remember, like this little japa exchange, and Divya Drishti, was it who someone was sharing? Oh, no, it was you two. Yeah. If we would chant like this, thinking we're chanting to Krishna, so we just had kirtan. And share a little bit. Were you thinking just chanting for chanting's sake or something, something? Or we're calling Krishna's name and we're conscious that Krishna was present and we're chanting to Krishna. Go ahead, share. A couple minutes. Yeah, just right now. Groups of three is okay if you... Okay. Then I have cartels, so that'll serve its purpose. You get the idea? No, okay, thank you. Thank you. Lights? We're calling this section connected chanting. Connected in the sense of linking with Krishna. So, when we're in danger or some situation of helplessness, like Draupadi, then we can call out feelingly. I'm kind of combining two sections here. chanting with feeling or chanting sincerely, there's a little story in this connection where Draupadi, the day after, she wanted to speak with Krishna, so she sought Krishna out and she asked Krishna, "Why did you take so long to come? I was in such difficulty." And Krishna said, "Well, the first time you were calling my name, you were approaching Grandfather Bhishma. And I thought, oh, she wants protection from Grandfather Bhishma. But Grandfather Bhishma was unable to protect you. And then you were still calling my name, but you went to Dronacharya. And you were expecting Dronacharya would help you. So I didn't come. But when you threw both of your hands in the air and you were calling my name, I came at once. No delay. I came at once." Or in Gajendra Moksha, it's described that even in the prayers that Gajendra was offering, they were standard prayers. He didn't even mention by name who he was calling, "Oh my Lord." But it was clear from the way that he was calling that he was calling for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As a result, Lord Shiva didn't come, Lord Brahma didn't come, none of the demigods came, Lord Vishnu came. Because that was the intent, conscious intent of Gajendra's prayer, and his situation was drastic, so he was certainly calling out feelingly. But Draupadi was also calling out feelingly, just she had other shelters. And same if we're chanting Krishna's name, like this little exchange with hearing one another's japa, but because another person is listening, we're being very attentive, because we don't want to get a bad mark. We want to get a good mark. We're competitive spirited, but far more powerful than competitive spirited is relationship. And that's the goal, it's a loving relationship. So connecting with the personality of Godhead. I don't think we have presently any statistics in the Hare Krishna movement of how many initiated devotees there were and how many devotees are currently practicing. But it's not 100%, that's for sure. Some estimates, well, not a large percentage. One guess that I heard was 20%. Maybe more. Whatever that percentage is, how does it happen that someone yesterday was practicing very nicely enough to become initiated, and then today or tomorrow they're not practicing anymore? Or I've had this question asked of me, how is it that someone that's been, you know, and they're expressing that they don't have any taste and they stop chanting for that reason? So let us not become such a statistic. And one of the surest ways to prevent that is by connecting with the person whose name we're calling. Just like this, going back to the initial description of transformation or change of heart, that becomes possible by a very powerful agent, and the powerful agent is Krishna himself, in the form of his holy name. That's our process. But if we're calling Krishna's name and we're not addressing him, the seat of consciousness is not addressing him, then where's the transformation? Something certainly beneficial is there. There's another description like this of one pious Indian lady who had been worshipping Sitaram for 30 plus years of her life, approached one elder Vaishnava and expressed that nothing happened. I mean, I initially started with all this enthusiasm and I've been doing everything dutifully, but you know, sometimes it goes the other direction, but this woman was expressing nothing's happened. I'm in the same space. And the reply came in the form of a question. The question was, has anyone ever explained to you that what's the true identity of Sitaram? Has anyone explained to you what's the natural relationship between yourself as a spirit soul and Sitaram? What's your actual identity with a spiritual conception? What's this process of worship of Sitaram meant to bring about? So from what place, in our case with chanting, what's the place from which we're chanting? Is it holding on to a material conception of false ego or an upadhi conception of our identity and chanting from that place, hoping that something wonderful is going to happen? In Harinam Chintamani, we discussed Harinam Chintamani here in Seattle one fine Thanksgiving weekend. Remember that? And one of the statements by Haridas Thakur is that for chanting to be effective, that transformation of heart to take place, one has to have proper sambandhagyan. Or say it the other way, one can go on chanting indefinitely with tattva vibrama, or mistaken conception of spiritual reality, and one isn't going to get the proper result. So this elder Vaishnava that was speaking to the lady that had been worshipping Sitaram, he said, perhaps you've been doing this for all these years with the conception that this is a form of punya. As far as the chanting of the holy name is concerned, this is considered an offense, that the chanting of the holy name is one of the ritualistic activities offered in the Vedas as fruitive activity or karmakanda. It's a pious activity. I've had some students from India describe to me like that. When I grew up, every time I had an exam, I went to the temple before and after the exam and prayed. And then, you know, I got into this good college. And so I heard about this, they were saying very explicitly, I heard about this group that was on campus and they were having kirtan and Bhagavad Gita class. And I thought, oh, that'll be really good. I've gone this far in my education, I can just add this punya to my academics and it'll help me get punya points and I can do well in my academics. So I started coming. And practically a year and a half passed before it hit me, wait a minute, this isn't just about punya. It's something else is going on. I'm not really sure what that something else is. You know, a little light went on. And then he started listening with another ear and heard, hey, wait a minute, what they're saying is not that, they're saying this. And when the understanding, at least, this is like this sankalpa idea. Sankalpa, not just, you know, pick something out of the air, but pull something from your heart and what's important to you? What's that deeper inside yearning or aspiration or what you would like to achieve spiritually? And combine that with proper instruction from, we're fortunate that we have Srila Prabhupada's teachings, but frankly, maybe, I'll soften it. Devotees don't take proper advantage of the treasure that Srila Prabhupada has so laboriously, with great devotion, offered us. I find sets of books in people's homes that still have plastic wrapping on them. Maybe they keep it on there because they don't want the dust to, like, you know, affect the pages and the binding. Okay? There's benefit. Scripture says there's benefit. Just keep the books on your shelf and walk by and, you know, offer your respect with folded palms. There's great spiritual benefit in it. But to take the book off your shelf and Shinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Ridyantakso Yubadrani Vidunoti Suritsatam Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So much benefit. So that the proper spiritual conception, and then where the separates the men from the boys, or those that don't make spiritual advancement and those make spiritual advancement, is consciously acting from that platform. So I'm emphasizing, this little section is to emphasize, the title of it is Connected Chanting, but to connect with whom? So those of you that came a bit late, after the kirtan, I asked the devotees to share how much during the kirtan they were thinking of who they were chanting for. Calling Krishna's name means you're calling Krishna. Call your friend and say, you know, hey Prabhu. Somebody that's not here. You know, could you, don't do this, but could you find where Amritananda is? And, you know, then Amritananda comes and I just ignore him. That's not nice. But, you know, just call his name. But, you know, anyway, you get the idea. It's a personal process. It's a relationship. Krishna's coming. From his side, Krishna's not, there's no delay. From our side, we're somewhere else. We're absent. There's a sign outside our door that says out to lunch. And it just stays out to lunch. Not good. So connect with the person. And to see the holy name as a practice or a ritual or a thing that we do is one approach, and then another is the holy name is a person. Abhinatvam nama namino. The name and the object named are none different. And in that understanding, that's where our purification comes, because Krishna and Purna Shuddho, Nityamukto, he's completely pure. But the benefit of that purification is in the relationship. It establishes realization of the Bhagavan conception, which we speak about, read about, talk about, but then we have to enter into if we to chant properly. It's part of this transition or transformation or change of heart is from the position of being the enjoyer to the position of being the enjoyed. the position of being the seer to being the seen, the position of one who is to be served as the one who is serving. It's complete turnaround from the material world to the spiritual world. One of the ways to think of chanting is doing something. Another way to think of chanting is receiving something. Receiving the pure holy name, and have the pure holy name touch your heart. And when the pure holy name, by calling Krishna to touch your heart, or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's statement is calling Lord Nityananda, oh Lord Nityananda, you are the most merciful of Lord Chaitanya's associates, who is the most beneficent of all incarnations of the Lord. You come to deliver the pure holy name. Be compassionate upon this fallen soul. Please deliver the pure holy name, although I'm not qualified. Your patita pavana. Kindly deliver the pure holy name. If it's expressed sincerely, and when that pure holy name touches the heart, then that sound vibration is chanting because of the relationship, because of the personal relationship. And from that proper chanting comes all the other activities of the devotional process. Visiting the temple. Visiting the temple is for glorification of the Supreme Lord, not just our getting purified of our contaminations and sins and so forth. It's the mood is different when you're in the mood of the servant. And something, so a very operative principle, besides the spiritual conception and applying the spiritual conception by practice, abhyasa, practice. Besides that spiritual conception and applying it in practice, there's a certain mood. And the mood is where it's a mood of humility. In the relationship with Krishna, there's a surrender unto Krishna. Pranipatena. Surrender and submission to Krishna. And in that, what's an impetus for that surrender or submission to Krishna? A mood of humility, because who's going to surrender or submit to someone unless there's some humility? And how does one understand, where does that humility awaken from? Recognizing in relation to Krishna, we're very tiny. Prabhupada said like this, Krishna consciousness is very simple. God is very great. I am very small. Therefore, I should serve him. That is Krishna consciousness. Very simple. And having, so, three things. One, two, three. I am very tiny. Insignificantly tiny. How tiny is the soul? 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair, which means it's subatomic. The soul is within the atom. It's smaller than the smallest. In the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, it describes the atom as the smallest particle of matter. And time is measured by how long it takes the sun to pass over one atom, is one unit of time, smallest unit of time. And beyond that is not worth talking about, it says. And within that smallest unit of atom, unit of matter, is the soul. But the soul animates the body of an elephant without the soul present. There's no life. It animates this body. It spreads consciousness throughout the entire body, like the sun spreads light throughout the whole universe. How powerful is the soul? And it's so tiny. And Krishna is unlimited. How powerful is Krishna? If the soul spreads illumination of consciousness throughout the whole body. Krishna, by a portion of a plenary portion, is within the heart of every soul. That's within every atom. And he's conscious of everything, everywhere, at all times. How powerful is Krishna? The third meditation is therefore how tiny we are in relation to Krishna. And that humility is an impetus for calling out. If it's taken the wrong way, I become very sad. I'm not a big, powerful, macho person. But from the spiritual conception, it's, I'm helpless. In that position of helplessness, it's nice. Because Krishna is very kind upon the helpless. Prabhupada would quote like this, "The meek shall inherit the kingdom of God." It's the relationship of servant is a nice relationship when the person being served is Krishna. Like Uddhava says to Vidura, can there possibly be a better master than Krishna? There is no possibility. Krishna is so kind that he was approached, he says to Vidura, he was approached by a demoness, Putana, who simply wanted to kill him. But because there was a little trace of maternal affection, she wanted to act as the mother of Krishna and poison him. Krishna accepted that service of mother, liberated her, and gave her an eternal position of an associate of Mother Yashoda in the spiritual world, assisting in her maternal rasa. Can there be anyone worthy of serving like Krishna? No. So loving. That's impetus for shelter. And in these stages of chanting, or the stages of relationship with the holy name, namashraya, taking full shelter in the holy name, that's the key that opens all the other doors, getting the fullness of Krishna's mercy through his shelter. We're not at that advanced, elevated stage, but the principle is operative at whatever position we are. If we're sincere, if we don't want to be a statistic of, well, I chanted for a little while in this lifetime, it's eternally to my benefit. That should not be the case. With proper training and guidance, and with sincere efforts from our side, we can continue to progress step by step by step into that process of chanting. There's one place where how humility arises is described with three different sources. One is when we recognize we've made a mistake, like an offense, that uh-oh experience that we all know. Another is just recognizing our circumstance in this material world. It's inherently not just, you know, we made a mistake in our choice. If there was a flaw in the misuse of free will that we made, but rather by design, dukkhalayam ashashvatam. This place is a place of misery. And under the influence of Maya, living entities like myself and others are trying to find happiness in a place that's a place of misery, like trying to find water in a desert or trying to find air underwater. I mean, it's not going to happen. It's by design, it's a different place. So the place is inherently problematic. But I chose it. And here I am, in this difficult circumstance. And I can't get out on my own effort. So, an example that Prabhupada gives is a person that's at the bottom of a well. And they're calling out, "Help! Help!" And if somebody doesn't come and help them, they can't get out. It's just the nature of the place. They can't get out of it. Bottom of the well. But then when someone comes, hears the call for help, and lowers the rope down to get you out of the well, what do? Grab onto the rope. And when at least the option is there, and the chanting of the holy name is that the instructions of Shastra, of scripture, through Krishna, through scripture and his representatives, and this strength that comes from the chanting of the holy name, from purification, to take hold of that rope. We require it. The material world by its design means suffering. Materially, feeling helpless is bad. Spiritually, it's a great impetus for helping us to connect in our relationship with Krishna. Because otherwise, complacency is too easy, or the business as usual is too easy, or using the example, the metaphor of the beginning part of this retreat, staying in our little comfort zone and not crossing through that liminal space into the spiritual reality. We want to take our dirty laundry, our baggage with us into the spiritual space. And we're not allowed. We have to leave that stuff behind. Our material attachments, the sense of self of being an enjoyer, even of the process of devotional service, starting with the process of chanting. It's meant to establish us in our relationship with Krishna as his servant. It's personalism is nice. The other is not nice. So the going through those keys, connect with that list of keys, this position of nishtha, or steadiness, to help us get beyond the eradication of unwanted things, or the anartha nivritti stage, placing ourselves simply as Krishna's servant. submission fully unto Krishna, I am yours. With the proper understanding of Krishna and the proper understanding of ourselves, and calling Krishna's name in that mood, knowing his name and he are not different, please engage me in your service. And Krishna's there. I'll go back to that nice description of Nanda Maharaj wishing Krishna to come to Vrindavan. It's Leela, it's rasa, it's the mood of separation. But he's not just loving Krishna, and because he's loving Krishna, he's happy. He wants Krishna's association. He wants to serve Krishna, embrace Krishna, care for Krishna in a very personal way. So that hankering of the soul is natural for all of us. It's just so covered. It's at least in our sadhana and our practice stage, be conscious, like that little exercise with chanting with another devotee. I invite you once again, take the opportunity outside of the retreat and share with others and think when you're chanting. Just like the previous retreat, there was an exercise that we did, and the chanting to Krishna exercise. Do you remember the one we did with think of the form of the deity in the temple or the deity that's in your home, that you're Ishtadev, that you most relate with? Picture that within your mind, close your eyes. You want to do that? You going to do that one? If you want. Whenever. Let me just go. So, I'm going to frame it, but the idea is, wasn't Richard Gauranga, is he here? He shared that his sharing after the Japa retreat last year was the whole 64 rounds was like that for him. And then he shared with me later. He's been doing that, like he did it for months later. So like some little sound bite of information that didn't just, for him, it wasn't just information, oh, that was a nice experience. It helped to transform his whole experience of japa. He has very nice deities in his home, and he would regularly chant in his mind before the deity. And you can chant literally before the deity, or like the sacred space discussion, where I have to do this because of my travel. I just like put in earplugs and block out the universe and enter into that internal space and chant. It's not easy, but with practice, you can just go into that space. And you're with Krishna in the form that's very sacred time and very sacred space, chanting. So the power of spiritual practice that's done with devotion in a very personal way can carry you beyond time and space, can carry you beyond the liminal space to the other side, if it's done in a very personal way. And perhaps just in conclusion, everyone wants to love and be loved without exception. Everyone is thinking, I have so much love to offer if only others were able to receive. And everyone's thinking the same way. And you have this chaotic world that we're living in where people are not loving one another. But it's intrinsic, it's natural. The message is that's meant to be reposed upon Krishna. And when that's reposed upon Krishna, that our natural capacity to love others and receive the love of others is enabled. It just, 1, 2, 3, just flows naturally. And the chanting of the holy name is to enter into that, awaken that, dormant love for Krishna, and in turn love for other living beings. Krishna is parts and parcel of living beings. And then that's a genuine loving relationship. This process is very much assisted by prayers. So I think we're going to just lead into our little exercises of certain prayers that by contemplation, by use of prayer, it can help you. I find it's very helpful. Something that's simple, something that's complicated you're meditating on the prayer instead of on Krishna. But a prayer to Krishna, to Krishna's holy name, can very much help that whole process of a very close personal connection with Krishna in the form of his holy name. I want to emphasize that in the wrap-up of our session in advance of the 64 round day. So I want to say a couple of practical things and then turn this over. I didn't have lunch, so I'm going to have my lunch after this. I'm going to disappear. As far as the schedule tomorrow, those that want to come, what time does the gate open up?
Six.
Six. Okay. The gate opens at 6?
I thought I saw that on the outside.
The gate opens at 6, but our Mangalarshi is at 5:30. Something's wrong.
I mean the park gate from the outside. But the people who are staying inside.
Okay, let's just get Nanda Sutta in here so we can go over the schedule. While we're waiting for him, the day tomorrow, please observe Monavrata. You know what that means? Observe silence. Those that have children may have to address things related to your children, that's understood. Other than those kinds of like really essential things, observe silence, and it will start from right after the morning class. Before the morning class, best if you can minimize conversation. Mangal Arati, what time does the gate open? Okay. So, what the schedule here says is Mangal Arati at 5:30, but some people are going to be driving a distance. Should we have the first class, just getting us prepared for the day, is at 7:30. One way is have it early and then come and attend Mangal Arati and chant with the devotees. Another is have it later and people will come and chant with the devotees. But it's, you know, to chant that many rounds in the course of the day, you have to start early. So, 5:30? So we'll have Mangal Arati here at 5:30. And then japa, during japa, unless you have to deal with your children, please no speaking, have a class. I'll advise you, from my own experience, eat lightly. Almost every japa retreat I forget. I have a regular breakfast and it's hard. Like the quality of chanting goes down after breakfast, at least for me. Eat not too little, but you know, eat lightly. And as far as possible, during the day, stay and say with the devotees. It rained the last time, so that was great. Everyone had to stay inside. But looks like it might not rain, so you can go for walks. But I recommend it if you go for a walk. Then come back and chant with the devotees. We'll have more than one tulsi plant or just one? Just one. Okay. Maybe put tulsi in the middle of the room in addition to the altar here. Find some place where you can peacefully, in concentration, chant. Stay together. Sometimes devotees like chanting in little groups or whatever works for you. But stay focused on the sankalpa. Did they write their sankalpa? It was really quick. Okay. Bring your sankalpa with you. From time to time, look, refresh, focus, bring that wonderful mercy of Krishna together in a very focused way into within your heart and from your heart that wish and some reciprocation, relation with Krishna. And the schedule will be after lunch prasadam for those that are newer members and can't make 64 rounds. We'll have something in that little area over there where there's picnic tables, or we'll meet there and figure out some place, and I'll lead some discussion with those that aren't going to be able to complete 64 rounds. And if there's nobody there, then I'll come back and join you for 64 rounds. Any questions on the schedule? Yes? Yeah, morning. Yeah. Those are really very important rounds for your 64. It's like you'll be flying. Yes. Yeah, here. Anything else? Question on the schedule? Nandasutta, anything? Birthday tomorrow? Day after tomorrow?
Is it day after? I guess Sunday, and tomorrow is the dog's birthday also, their son. Sundar and Vishakanta Mata's son. That's all, and we'll be serving Vishakanta at
Okay, you should have held your announcements up, though, because that cut into the flow of what we're doing. Go ahead. We're going to have some exercises, so stay put. I'm going to go have my lunch, but you please stay and take part. This will help you in your japa tomorrow and thereafter.
So we're going to do a meditation now to help you enter into a deeper space of chanting to Krishna. And hopefully this meditation you can take back with you to your home. And you'll understand what I'm saying as we go through it. So for now, I'd like you to please sit straight. Find a position that you can be comfortable in and sit straight and alert but yet relaxed. Don't fall asleep. And you can close your eyes. Close your eyes and focus on your breath. Oh.
This initial part is just to help ground us and bring our focus internally. Please focus. You can take some deep breaths. I want you to imagine now that you've had a very difficult day. I want to try to enter into that space of a difficult day. Perhaps you woke up with poor health, or you couldn't sleep well, yet had to go to work. And you go to work, and your boss yells at you, a friend calls and insults you, and you have a project deadline coming up, really stressed out. You go through the day somehow, and then you come home, anticipating, expecting some support from your spouse, but unfortunately they've had a bad day too. There's no support there. And to add to it, the children are cranky. It's too much to deal with in this material world. But after entering that difficult space, I want you to now turn your attention to your heart. Krishna resides in our heart. Try to visualize that form of Krishna that attracts you the most. He is the Lord of your heart. Look at his beautiful smile and reddish lips, his curly hair, beautiful lotus eyes. And look at his gaze. He's looking at you with much love. Now I'd like to request you to invite this Lord within your heart, out of your heart. And I'd like you to repeat after me a few sentences to Krishna. I have nothing to do with all these sufferings. I have an existence beyond my gross and subtle body. I am an atomic soul, very small. Very tiny, but yet worthy, because I'm your part and parcel. And you my Lord, are the infinite conscious entity. You are supremely merciful and all-loving and all-knowing. You don't need to repeat this, but so Krishna, he is our protector, only protector, only maintainer. And though we are very tiny, we're connected to him. And that is our true worth in this world. Krishna knows all our thoughts, our worries, our anxieties, our deepest desires. I want you to now chant to Krishna, who is standing before you very eagerly waiting to hear your chanting. Krishna is listening. Thank you. You may slowly stop now, still with your eyes closed. I want you to repeat after me. My dear Lord, I take responsibility for breaking my relationship with you. I'm yours, Krishna, but I don't always see it. I want to awaken my loving relationship with you by chanting your holy names, in which you have invested all your potencies. Please accept me. Please accept me in your service. Please engage me and purify me. Do not ever leave me. You may chant again for some time.
Thank you.
may slowly stop now. Your eyes still closed. Krishna is always there in our heart, fully accessible. Is always listening to our deepest callings. I want you to now place your palms on your heart and stay in gratitude. And bow down to Krishna. I'd like you to now take about 5 or 10 minutes to reflect on your experience through this meditation. You can slowly open your eyes and become aware of the surroundings. And I want you to journal your experience while it's very fresh in your heart. If someone doesn't have paper, you can borrow from your neighbor, or you can just reflect in your own mind. The purpose of journaling is just to allow the experience to more deeply enter into our heart. Take another 2 minutes. Close now. I observed that many people were chanting very deeply. I could feel the energy. It moved me personally, just even though I was not doing the meditation myself, but it was a moving experience for me to just be in this space. So I'd like to now invite some volunteers to share their experience that you had. Just take like maybe 10 minutes until 7. Someone like to share something? Perhaps there's hesitation because the experience was very deep and personal, but you can share whatever you can share. You don't need to share everything, but yes. And not having this relationship, we find ourselves in so many anxieties around us. Anyone else? Thank you. Please speak loudly so people behind you can hear too. Even I can't hear.
Here and then I take it and then it fades away and then I come back and hear and I felt that I'm very ungrateful for whatever else. But he's still continuing to give me. So I was praying to Krishna that let me learn and try to be grateful so that I won't forget this. And as you said, right, that was so touching, like please accept me and don't leave me. Like I became a little afraid. Oh, I've already done that and how long will Krishna keep giving me chances? There should be a point that I should learn and fix. Because I don't want, because we don't want to again do that same mistake. So I was thinking like that.
Thank you, Mataji, for giving us this incredible experience.
I just wrote a short letter to Krishna. Sure. I can just read that.
Sure.
Oh Krishna, I just realized today that you're actually present everywhere. I could see you smiling at me. Thank you for taking a seat in my heart upon my request. You were so eagerly hearing me chant and lovingly looking at me. I felt like a baby kicking on the mother's face, and yet the mother so lovingly reciprocating with the baby. Every time I turn my face away from you, you do not give up on me, Krishna. I am very grateful to you for your love. Please forgive me one more time for being so reluctant and unloving. Please accept me as your loving servant, and please engage me in your devotional service. Please melt my stone-like heart and give me the taste for your holy names.
Hare Krishna Mataji. So during the meditation when you said Krishna is hearing, then I felt like to shout out more, because you know I felt like really Krishna is listening. So that is one reflection.
Thank you.
Can I read something, Mataji, which I wrote down? I just want to read. I just wanted to read what I wrote down. The experience was very deep for me this time, by the mercy. As I opened my inner eyes, there smiled Radha Shyam Sundar, looking at me with my real ties, with them and Sri Srinivai Nithai. With their graceful glance upon me, they opened the gates for my experience of really praying to them keenly to be of some insignificant service. As I started praying them, voices of my falsity interfere, but with the strength of their dear servants, my attention still with them remained captured. Deeper in my heart is the desire to love and serve. Weaker was myself because of my broken parts, but I still was feeling grateful for being given this human birth, even though I rebelled so much against them again and again. So my experience at the end was feeling a little more grateful than ever to not just directly to Krishna, even though he was in front of me, but I was feeling grateful to my spiritual master and my teachers for actually letting me have this opportunity to even interact with Krishna. If not them, I wouldn't be anywhere. So thank you. Thanks very much, Mataji, for having this meditation. So I felt like that Krishna is mine. I have someone who is all supreme, all attractive, all powerful as my master. He actually lives in my heart, and when I chant, I pray, I talk, he listens to me. He is mine. I've turned away from Krishna, and now with my love service, I will please Krishna. He is so kind. He hears and bears everything. Let me focus all and every action to Krishna rather than serving fictitious Maya. I felt that I have a shelter. He is my shelter, my refuge, and I need nothing else in this world.
I can create the sacred space anywhere as I have Krishna with me in my heart. I'm his servant, I'm none, and he's everything. I want to serve him with all my energy. I don't know how long I have this body, but I need to serve Krishna with every word, action, breath, and not waste any moment for anything else in life. His effulgence is, I experienced it, was so brilliant, and his smile is so magnificent, and I deeply love Krishna, and I want to establish that relationship, and I think silence and keeping focus to please Master of Senses is my goal.
I hope it was a good experience for everyone. It creates gratitude, creates humility, this exercise. I'd like to recommend, particularly there's times in our life when disturbed by so many things, and we're not able to turn to Krishna at those times. You can think of this meditation at those times. That's why I started it with, imagine having a difficult day. And the moment you turn your attention to your heart, to Krishna, everything changes. It's just like it dissolves. Whatever that stuff was, it just dissolves immediately. Because the source of all our miseries is not having that relationship with Krishna. So you can practice it at your home.